This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
I'll be right back. So I wanted to talk just briefly about posture. So when we're sitting, there's something about if you lean back just a little, you're leaning into the unmanifest, and a little bit forward, it's manifest. So we set ourselves between the two. And then with our spine aligned, all the chakras aligned, and the energy can flow from between heaven and earth, or the earth and the sky. And that's the place that we're sitting, which is in between. And it's also, when you find that spot, the place where the okesa touches your shoulder and becomes the true okesa. And part of sitting like that, finding that posture in between unmanifest and manifest, is like the sense of openness and space. And by familiarizing yourself with that place, you become grounded in space, basically. So it becomes a familiar place. There's something, I think it's out of the Pankavatara Sutra, but it's in the very beginning. It's not the meat of the sutra particularly, but they've all done their rounds through town, alms, and return back, wash their bowls and put them away, and describe, says he, Shakyamuni Buddha, sits down and becomes aware of what's in front of him. This is like what we were talking about at tea time, just to allow whatever is in front of you, become aware of it. And this awareness, I say, is capital A awareness, because it's not cognition. It's the awareness of true nature, which has no self that's being aware. And I'm going to read something from somebody else that describes that a little more. But everything is contained in that awareness. It's what's called emptiness, because remember Coben saying this word emptiness. He said it was very difficult to translate, because he was helping translate with Suzuki Roshi and Katagiri Roshi. He said this word, one time he said it's really everythingness. But it's called empty because it has no attributes that can be described. You can't articulate it. And when you're able to sit without, I want to say comfortably, in that space, having yourself step, this sense of self step back, your ego construct, you can start to witness the nature of the construct that you've created, who you are, what you're doing, wondering what you're doing, all of that starts to appear. Almost, it's almost like the neurosis appears. And with this non-self awareness, that construct can, you can relax, and it starts to come apart. Some of us get a little nervous when it starts to come apart, and we retract pretty quickly around it. You can be assured that when you go out of the Zendo, it'll come rushing back in. It's hard to escape. But I was talking with my son when we were just the week before this working in a, on a job, and go out to dinner and have a conversation kind of like this one that I'm relaying. He's starting to express his own sense of his spiritual awareness and world. I mean, we were talking about being untethered. And I think ultimately in practice, there's a place where you have to go and allow yourself to be untethered and completely let go and disappear into space, to this luminous space. And when you do, you also have, it's like it's a timeless place wherein nothing is happening, in the sense of there's no, they say there's no birth and death, there's no self or other. It's there's nothing arising and nothing dissipating. There's no action. And from that place, you have to determine whether you're coming back or not. And if so, why? And once you determine why, how far back to come? How far back into that construct are you going to go? Because a lot of times, the way life goes, you're formed by your family situation, friends, culture, but suddenly you find yourself attracted to the Dharma and enter into the practice, and you can just kind of hang out there. But to really take it out is pass through the wall, pass through the tangible qualities of existence into this luminous space is commonly one common way of describing it. And I want to read this. Well, there's a couple things actually. This one's from, let's see, who is it? Bhikkhu Urjun Rinpoche. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but he describes it like this. The ground to be understood is the all-pervasive Sugata essence, uncompounded, luminous, and empty. It is the natural state of awareness. Beyond confusion and liberation, it is completely quiescent like space. Although it abides without separation in samsara or joining in nirvana, due to the great demon of co-emergent and conceptual ignorance from the solidified habitual patterns of grasping and fixation and the different perceptions of worlds and inhabitants, the six classes of beings appeared as a dream. Although this is so, you have never moved and will never move from the original condition of the essence. And another one is, these are based on Dzogchen mantras or teachings. I had a situation where I went way, 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 way out there. I knew what it was because it's happened before on the cushion at Sishin. So it didn't alarm me in any way. It was quite pleasant in a sense. But when I came back to my body and consciousness, I found that these texts really resonated with me because they described what happened or the place of, it's like the underlying essence that we all are. So I have a particular affinity for this, far more so than Zen teachings, although some of them I can look from here and look at the Zen teachings and go, oh, now I see what they're talking about. It's just a different cultural language, I guess. And the Dzogchen Tantras, I feel like a lot of them, it's they're speaking like we. So it's like a council has come together, like if all of us were to describe this, we blah 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 about the state. And it has a more a softer, more feminine feel too than the Japanese style. But the two, there was a academic paper written, and the person says that there was an event on northern India, which would be Shakyamuni Buddha's awakening, and it spread north into Tibet and east into China and Japan and Korea. And the one that went north was called Dzogchen, and the one that went east is called Chan or Zen. So there, the paper, the point was that there, it's the same information, just filtered a little differently. So this is from Jingme Lingpa, a powerful teacher. The location of the truth of the great perfection is the unfabricated mind of the present moment. This naked, radiant awareness itself, not a hair of which has been forced into relaxation. Maintaining this at all times, just through not forgetting it, even in states of eating, sleeping, walking, and sitting, is called meditation. However, until you are free from the obscurations of cognition, it is impossible for this not to be mixed with the experiences of bliss, clarity, and non-conceptualization. Nevertheless, just by not forgetting the nature of one's own awareness, the kind that is not tangled mindfulness that gets more tangled in order to be mindful, at some point, the unelaborated ultimate truth, transcending terms and examples, will appear. This is from a Western practitioner. I don't know who it is, but I came out of a workshop that I went to a long time ago about Dzogchen. Most practitioners think it's possible through shamatha to relax into our underlying and contextual condition of Buddha mind. Indeed, the mind can relax into a level of its own undisturbed, still clarity, but that is not Rigpa, that is still mind or sem. Rigpa is original nature, experience of original nature. Let's look very closely at a typical practice session. The practitioner is seeking to experience itself as the clear awareness in which mental phenomena are appearing and disappearing. The practitioner is seeking to be in the perspective of being the empty, aware context in which mental phenomena are appearing as content. We can become somewhat established in this neutral witnessing awareness while observing the appearance and disappearance of mental events. We feel detached from these mental appearances as thoughts and images. It feels like we are relaxed and resting in our authentic natural state while watching the mind movie unconcerned. But this is the comfy trap that can last decades and entire lifetimes for a practitioner. That entire experience is just more mental content appearing in our actual natural state. The neutral witness is itself egoic consciousness observing other aspects of its own mental activity. The I consciousness is still present as the observing awareness. I am observing the mental content coming and going. Dualistic state is still present. To come to the actual resting place as the natural state or Buddha's mind, it's as though consciousness takes one further step behind the witnessing eye that is engaged in observing as thoughts come and go. If successful, the eye, as the observing awareness, disappears completely. The seeker is this illusory egoic witness or observer that disappears. The natural state is that condition where no subjective observer exists to be observing phenomenon, and no phenomenon are being observed. It's an objectless, vividly awake consciousness where even the consciousness itself is not subjectified or objectified. All self-referencing is absent. In this vivid condition of crystal clear, utter transparency, there is no one to rest relaxed and no condition to be relaxed into. But what I call capital A awareness is what he's describing, where stepping back from consciousness that's observing. Just to be clear. If you can allow yourself to drop into that, not drop in, but expand out. This is where English language stops working very well for me to describe this because it's all full of pronouns which aren't relevant in this case. So, because there is nobody there doing this. And but it's if you can. Not to you, but this occurs. It's an unassailable position. Nothing is occurring, so not there's no almost possible to describe. It's what the Heart Sutra chanting at the end. No eyes, no ears, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no realm of eyes, and so forth. So no realm of mind consciousness. So I don't know how it's going for you. I mean, sometimes I'm sitting here and I have that consciousness going, but I just keep remaining present and you drop away. But there's a kind of staying with it might take a relative amount of time, but there's just suddenly pop. All gone. Everything you thought you were, your whole made up belief system and world is primordial light. You realize then that the whole thing has been a shell created within this that keeps you from seeing this true nature. And that's what I started by saying. So then you have to figure out how to come back and what you're going to be. And what happens is you don't have to, you could just pass into glittering light and be gone. But there's usually a tether of some sort that's pulling. And so you've got this vow, intention, karma, something. And it's an opportunity to reset what those are. Why are you? So I had to think about it. And I thought, okay, it's family for me, which includes Sangha. My wife, my son, grandchildren, and Sangha. I'm back. It's sort of kind of like the Bodhisattva vow. I want to tell you about this because it's what we're all looking for in some way. But also there's from coming out of that cosmic awareness that has no self into consciousness where you're going, oh, being reborn and looking at those vows and intention, those things hit. It's important what you think because it hits the field of the unified field of this light and it sets up a vibration and it causes this to manifest. So we're all manifesting this. Right now, this moment. And so consider. And the other thing is, as I'm talking about this, I'm reminded that, like, that whole description of seemingly, big is actually happening every moment. That same opportunity is there. There's, Tobin talked about Ma. He was he did Zen archery, and we practiced with him a little bit. My wife Barbara was way into it. I did some, but it's a form where the target's over here, and you go through this whole thing with the arrow knocked and ready to go, and you pull it out, and then you look and let it go, and that right here, that's. Before you release, that's ma space in between. So, as everything kind of opens up, it goes vast into the extents of the universes. And at the, so, as that opens up, each moment, space, that space starts to open up, like as we're doing Kinyin or something. There's like, you have that every step, every heartbeat, and you have the opportunity. The same thing is happening, like you are s establishing the next moment from that space. Any question? No. Distinctly. So, oh yeah, it's not the conclusion at all. I just got tired of talking about it. I wouldn't call it enlightenment, particularly. Just a very subtle awareness of that state. Don't take it personally. No, but it's again, it's hard to articulate, but the sense of self, it's there, not through that whole experience necessarily, but so it's like we're sitting here as individuals. That's the sense that we have. But as you wake up to this, I'm describing it only because, well, so two things. In the old days, I said, you're not supposed to talk about it because why? Because then people will have an idea about it and grasp for it. Well, go for it, grasp for it. I mean, there's. And at one point, I was like, well, we're chanting the Heart Sutra every day. It's talking about it clearly and distinctly. So I'm going to talk about it because, well, it's, I mean, I didn't talk much for most of my adult life. And it's only recently that Tobin told me to say something. And it took me about 10 years after that to come around to saying something. But I think it's important to know that this is so. I happen to go through it. So I can describe it and I can tell you about it. But it's backed up by 2,500 years of teachings. But coming through that, I would not call it enlightenment. I'm not enlightened in that sense. But I did go to some friends because I was pretty flummoxed about what to do because I was pretty disembodied. It's very difficult to get grounded. And interestingly, the one thing that kept me somewhat grounded was music. I listened to it in my hearing aids. But I went and talked to some friends that I thought would really know it because they were extremely well practiced students of Trungpa Rinpoche. And one guy that I thought would didn't get what I was saying, but or describing, but did mention integration as being what to do. And again, it goes to having already decided why I'm here. And so that's the initial step to integration.
Also, I want to ask three.
I don't remember saying exactly that the way you're portraying. I could have certainly, but there's a His name is David Germano. He has a YouTube channel, but he's an extremely well read, probably practiced Enzo Gen texts. And he talks about basically going from unmanifest to manifest. The phrase that's used, or the description, is Samanta Bahadra, is equal to original true nature, original mind, Samanta Bahadra. And why does Samanta Bahadra give birth to creation? He talks about a lot of things, but the two key ones, one is karmic creation and the other is divine creation. And he also says that Samanta Bahadra and things are formed. There's a passage in a book, like Dzogchen Tantras. They call them tantras. There, it says, Samanta Bahadra awoke and gave birth to trillions of worlds, upon which the Nirmanakaya Buddhas were teaching the various bodhisattvas. And I read that, and I instantly flashed on the James Webb telescope piece of sky the size of a grain of sand that was just loaded with galaxies. How did they know that back then? So I also experienced something like that, where it's just like realms just going through. This is one realm. This is not the only thing that's going on. There's trillions of realms just all here right now. It's just, we don't see it normally, but these eyes, physical eyes, you have to use one of the other four eyes. You know them. So may not be so important to access those. Oh, yes. So what's No, I think Colvin was totally on board with this. I mean, I've never gone back and read Embracing Mind or listened to any of his talks because I was there in person hearing a lot of them. So, but I will say that when he talked, it was very soft spoken, kind of slightly accented English, and very, very slow. And I would sometimes I'd be sitting and it would be at night like this, and we'd sat all day and my legs hurt. Stop talking. Okay, let's edit that out. But all I can say is it was the energy, like it just what he was talking about wasn't so important. And I think what he was doing, and I sometimes feel when I'm giving a talk, it's like coming right through your aura from behind you. And it's just this, that's why when Steve and I came up with name for that study group, was a conduit to ancient teachings. It's that kind of conduit. Just it's an energy field that's not constricted by time. So those words are almost immaterial. They're loaded with energy, and it's the kind of energy I was saying about having a certain intention about moving out of space into manifesting in space. It's all occurring in this primordial light state. So even though you say, I'm going to integrate this, or I'm going to do thus and such, or this is my vow, this is my intention, it's all occurring in the field of light. It's not going outside of that to do something. It's just creating within it. I mean, I look and I see all these vibrating light entities in front of me. So, or I remember another example kind of outside of the spiritual world is I was taking a drawing class back in Boston. So I, and that teacher was really good. He'd show you how to draw, like, there's a ledge right here, and he'd put the ledge, and then and the eyeball sits on it, and he draws this eyeball like, whoa. And there's a muscle that's draped across it that holds it in with a slit in it, to make the. So after that class, I'm walking down Comm Ave and all these faces are coming, and it's like, oh, these eyeballs and muscles. So it's so part of what you can do is talk yourself into it, But that's what the fellow who was talking about the comfy trap, like, that isn't the true experience. So the true experience, how do you get there? I don't really know. I mean, except to say, I think that it's being present and aware. While you're sitting, try that. Just present, like not letting go of being present, but not contrived either. It's this balance between those. And that goes to manifestation. It's the same thing. Like, How are you going to appear out of this light field now and ostensibly be walking around as an individual? That's what it feels like. Oh, hey, I have autonomous action. I go run out of the room if I want. And, but everything's interrelated. It's just like all this is happening. It's called, sometimes called ornaments of space.
You want to. I think. Or that doesn't make sense. I don't know whether. Meaning. Come back. You want to come back? Don't want it?
No, it's good. It's good.
Well, that's funny. That's an impossible. That's what. Also, that means. That's the whole thing. Basically, like things, everything hard.
So. One thing I reflected on is the source of these all, Zen, Dzogchen, other spiritual traditions. Some of these people were allowed, this goes to your question, that allowed to and cared for to be in that state. They had a propensity for it. And bringing that information out from, like a translator from that space. I don't know that we have that privilege, or really that it's the right thing to do now. But I will say, for me, working in that integration place, I'm still working on, like I was saying a minute ago, that it's not outside of that. So you never leave. It's just you start to understand that, like it's talked about, the concept of samsara nirvana or a duality, it's a concept. Discard that. And that everything's appearing within this space primordial light. And regardless, you can't escape that, so to speak. So you're constantly in that, doing whatever action deem necessary. And sometimes, it is met with objection, and sometimes it's welcomed. But there is something about that particular place that you, all these attributes that we aspire to are inherent in it. So you don't have to go seeking it. Bodhidharma, I can't quite remember, but I'd have to read it. But you guys can go look it up in the Bloodstream Sermon, and it's basically saying you can, offer incense and do all that. What's that? Recite sutras or memorize sutras. It will give you a good memory and so on and so forth. But it won't make you a Buddha, is what he's basically saying. I had to look that up because Martin was dying, and his sangha wrote out, please offer incense and chant sutras for Martin. And I was like, what the fuck is that going to do? He's got stage five cancer and a month to live. So I don't know if there was a stage five, but it was pretty dire. And So I wrote him with that quote about from Bodhidharma saying, and I said, I think what Martin would want you to do really is to realize your true nature, not offer incense and chanting to his well-being. It's not going to help. And he wasn't, I'd already talked to him about what's going to happen when you die. He was worried about it. Before, he was sort of like, eh, it's okay, like no life or death. His students told me that. But when I was talking to him, and we were very close for a long time, years and years, he was worried. He didn't know what was going to happen. And I told him, it's going to be okay. Not going to be okay. But the only thing I could offer him was something I'd read, which is that you take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha for as long as you can, as you feel your consciousness leaving your body and body shutting down, basically, in the senses that you continue to take refuge if you want to be born, reborn in a Buddha realm. You may not. He also said, enlightenment has to be renewed, something like that. You can't hang on to it, but you can familiarize yourself with the place. I mean, Tobin lived in a certain way, in a certain realm, and there was a kind of tear in the fabric, that most of us have shut, but it was open. And it was kind of bothersome for him because people would come into it, be in our living room, disembodied people, confused about where they were or what, because they died, obviously, kind of in this ghost-like state, and be in a bardo, and weren't sure what to do, so they'd come and find him. But that isn't so helpful, I don't think, no. But I guess the reason I bring that kind of stuff up is that Tobin, as an example, was ungrounded. We had this beautiful Avalokiteshvara statue, wooden one, and he was on travel after talking Jonathan into going off his meds. And Jonathan extremely bipolar, and when he went off his meds, it was like, ooh, the circus came to town. And one time in the middle of the winter, we always had a wood stove, and it was going like this one was, and he took Avalokiteshvara and lobbed it in, and it was, you couldn't get it out at that. And Tobin, I told him when he came back, like, ah, Avalokiteshvara went traveling. It's like, whew. Well, that may be enough for tonight. We have more time to talk about it. Something. You're in a hurry. Huh? For what? Oh, come on. No, we had this conversation, Stephen. We were at a session, and I was talking like this, and Steve says, I'm not trying to, but I said, he says just that, like, how do I experience that? And I said, you're experiencing it now. This is enlightened mind. Breathe through all the stuff, the doubts about it. This is it. This is it.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.